Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Baba says, when God is pleased with you, the whole world will be pleased with you. Therefore, let all your efforts be directed towards pleasing God. Unquote. The question then becomes, how does Bhagwan Baba expect us to please God? He answered that exact question in a divine discourse that he delivered on August the 22nd in the year 2000. And our Lord Sai said, God does not expect you to perform rituals, nor does he want you to study the scriptures. All that he desires from you is 8 types of flowers. God will be pleased with you and confer boons on you only when you offer him these flowers which are dear to him. No benefit accrues from offering the flowers which fade away and decay. Offer him the 8 flowers of non-violence, control of senses, compassion, forbearance, peace, penance, meditation, and truth. Your life will find fulfillment when you please God by offering him these flowers. And love is the undercurrent of all of these. So lead a life suffused with love. Divine Discourse, August 22nd, year 2000. Offering myself at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. This is Karuna signing in live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, along with audio engineer Brother Ganesh. Good morning, Sai Ram, and a very warm welcome to Morning Glory. Today is the 2nd of January 2014. Yes, that is right. The year 2014 has begun already, and we are loving it here in the ashram where we have picture-perfect weather conditions with clear blue skies, crisp air, lows of 17 and highs of 29 degrees Celsius. Please accept our New Year greetings, and these come from all of us at Radio Sai. That is, those of us you often hear on Radio Sai and the real quiet heroes of Radio Sai who work diligently behind the scenes to ensure Bhagwan's divine message and his infinite love reaches you daily through the airwaves. All of us pray to Swami that the year 2014 brings you abundance of health, motivation, inspiration and resolve to keep moving forward on the path of the 8 flowers that Bhagwan expects from us. And let me remind you what the 8 flowers are once again. Non-violence, control of senses, compassion, forbearance, peace, penance, meditation and truth. May the year 2014 intensify our concern for others and love and respect for all forms of life. May our daily prayers always include Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, for the well-being and happiness of all the beings in all the worlds. With that wish, I am pleased to inform you that Morning Glory is ready for takeoff in the new year with some excellent, heartwarming news. And I am so pleased to inform you that we have an extraordinary guest here with us in the studio right now to share the good news with all of us. That apart, last week on Morning Glory, you heard a very articulate Ashwin Venkateshwaran, a Sai School and Sai University alumnus, speak of his experiences in part 1 of his Fleeting Moments interview. Be sure to catch part 2 of this interview later on Morning Glory. But before we go there, here's what's making news in Prashanti Nilayam. The ashram is milling with Sai students past and present. The past few days, Mandir witnessed gratitude programs by homecoming alumni of the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School and the Sai University. It has now become a tradition for thousands of Sai alumni from all over the world to flock home at this time of the year for their annual reunion at the lotus feet of their beloved Sai. December 31st saw annual day celebrations by the alumni of the Sai school here in Prashanti, and January 1st, 2014, that's just yesterday, saw the men alumni of the Sai University celebrate their annual day with offerings of their devotion and gratitude to the revered founder chancellor of the Alma Mater. Now, as we all know, Bhagwan's glory is only growing leaps and bounds with each passing day. And on December 23rd, 2013, about a week ago, the global Sai family was ecstatic when we received the news that the Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital has won the CNBC TV 18 Healthcare Award. Dr. Narasimhan, the director of the Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital, and Mr. S.S. Naganand, member of the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, received this prestigious award on 23rd of December 2013 at a glittering ceremony at the Taj Palace Hotel in New Delhi. And dear listeners, at Morning Glory, are we ever pleased to have Dr. Narasimhan right here in the studio with us. Sai Ram, Dr. Narasimhan, and a very warm welcome to Morning Glory, sir.
Sai Ram, madam. Pranams to the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagawan. I am grateful on the one hand to the Almighty Bhagawan and on the other hand to Radio Sai for having given me this opportunity to come down here and share some of the experiences, the events which took place on the 23rd of December at Taj Palace Hotel, New Delhi, wherein the Satya Sai Mobile Hospital was bestowed with the organization which does innovation in transforming human lives, especially in the field of healthcare. So I think I'll be able to share quite a few number of experiences, not only from this event, but as you know, the other intricate aspects of working of the Satya Sai Mobile Hospital, which are especially relevant to today's sort of an interaction which I'll have with you.
And might I add, we are really so looking forward to it. Now, let me just go back to the moment when you received the news. Can you recreate that moment for us? What was it like? Were you surprised?
Yes, madam. Normally, as you all know, we take seva as a sadhana.
Of course.
An exercise which is meant for our own individual evolution. So, really speaking, I was not totally elated or exhilarated at that moment. But after some time, I felt reasonably happy because the award has been given to Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital, which is nothing but a sort of a recognition. Recognition not in the literal sense of the word, but a mechanism to make people aware of the extraordinary medical services which are being run even today, started by Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And it is now 3 years more that it has stood the test of time, and all these institutions are not really doing a good job, but have expanded, have diversified, and shown to the world that it is the theme, the guiding principles of Baba, which drives them to work, and not just the physical frame which was with us for about 8 years.
Very well said, Doctor. Wonderful. Now, you went to this function at the Taj Palace in the national capital, New Delhi, with Mr. Naganand. Tell us all about it.
Before I tell about that, I would like to clear a small misconception.
Sure.
A lot of hype is being made, sound and noise is being created that Dr. Narasimhan has been awarded with that award. To tell you the truth, it is not so. It is the Satya Sai Mobile Hospital. But again, I would not be too unduly modest to say that, you know, I'm just a part of it. It is the truth that I have been toiling in and day out. And the only time I took leave away from work was when my father and my mother were on their deathbed. That apart, for the last 9 years, I have not taken a single leave from the working of the mobile hospital. Because in India, as you know, the psychology normally is an organization flourishes if the head of that organization is dynamic. I have played that important role. But still, overall, it is the Satya Sai Mobile Hospital which got every prestigious award, so to say. Initially, I did not know the intricacies of that award, but when I went there, and when the organizers for the first 15 minutes described as to how actually the award is given, I was really dumbfounded.
So did somebody nominate us? How did it happen?
No, it is like, you know, the CNBC and the ICICI, they give this work of trying to screen out the hospitals, shortlist them, and finally decide on them to an agency called IMRB, Indian Medical Research Bureau.
Okay.
And the contract is the IMRB makes it sure that no influence will be exerted on it. And over a period of 1 year, they visit 3,000 hospitals. It is really unbelievable. They visit 3,000 hospitals and they do it in a very confidential way. The hospitals are not known as to who are these people coming, when do they come. Because we did try to ask the jury members, but they were reluctant to share the information. And that really doubled the happiness which I had in my mind. And as you know, Satya Sai organization, we not only make any overt claims, but even in a subtle fashion, we don't send any information about the pattern of working, the way beneficiaries are being benefited, the way eminent doctors come for service. None of this we do.
True. Now, when you were at this function, what sort of a general reaction did you sense from the crowd there? It was the who's who from the healthcare industry in India, and most of it is private. So you were two people, two gentlemen who were representing the Satya Sai healthcare system. What was the general response?
See, initially they read out the whole list of recipients of this award. And definitely at that time, because I was sitting, only my people who were sitting aside me, you know, I just told them that ours is unique in that it is absolutely free. They said, yes, we all know about this, but please don't tell us to do this. We can never do that.
Oh.
Yeah. And
these are profit-making ventures.
Yes. And when Dr. Mohan, our diabetologist,
yes.
I think he is the chairman of the Satya Sai Central State Trust at Tamil Nadu.
That is right.
He told me that when you went to take the award, I found the biggest applause was for you only. Like in the sense, these corporate hospitals, they do a lot of commerce. But still, I think at the heart of hearts, every human being, and especially these people also know that it is something good to do free. And in my own experience back at Hyderabad, even before I came to Parthi,
right,
where we were doing free service in the villages and picking up patients who need surgeries, whenever I used to make a call to these leading surgeons, they never said no. They simply wanted an organization which is transparent in its motive, pure in its conduct, and really helping poor people. So definitely, you know, in that hall, the other hospitals and the other award winners must have been both surprised and felt happy in their heart of hearts. And during dinner time, yes, many people did express their appreciation to Bhagwan Baba especially. Because repeatedly we were telling Swami's name only as contributory for everything, the start of it, the running of it, and even now we told them.
Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Even though the physical frame is not there, we very much feel his presence.
So lovely.
Yeah.
And they were generally open-minded
to
this.
Yes, they were absolutely open-minded.
You both were great ambassadors, I must say. Congratulations,
yeah.
Really.
Thank you, Vanjali.
That's beautiful. Now, I want to know, I understand Mr. Naganand gave an acceptance speech. What was the gist of his acceptance?
The gist of his speech was mainly on the fact that these are institutions which were started by Baba on the important premise that they will work. They will not charge a pie on any count from the beneficiaries. And the type of hospitals which are running under that, under the Satya Sai Central Trust, he told them. But to tell you frankly, I was there, I felt that it would have been better if I had also spoken a few words on two words which the CNBC used when they gave the commendation, the award for us. They mentioned innovation in bringing about transformation in the lives of people.
And Dr. Narasimhan, now is your moment to express yourself to millions of people who listen to Radio Sai. So please go ahead. If you had to give your acceptance speech right now, Swami, sitting in this chair, what would you say? Go ahead.
Yes, because as you know, the innovation and the transformation which has been going on even now, this has been on three different planes. First thing, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. very much in line with, I would be emboldened to say, what the World Health Organization now speaks about. Health being not just absence of disease, but a state of complete physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. They have added the spiritual dimension of health. And as you know, Bhagwan himself said when he defined health, he said, health is a state where there are five components present. He said they are ahara, achara, vichara, vihara, uchara. If all these are present...
Would you care to translate, sir?
Yeah, ahara relates to the food we take. As you know, food, even from olden Indian philosophy, it is always said the most subtle part of the food becomes the thought. Then vihara is the places which you visit. Like you can visit a satsang or you can visit a club. And then vichara is the most important point which Swami always used to harp to us in interviews, the thoughts which you entertain in your... And uchara in your mind. Uchara is the words which you speak. And ahara, vihara, vichara, uchara. Ahara, vihara, vichara, achara. Your conduct. Your conduct with others, either in the community or neighbors or in the workplace
or
with your relatives. Mm-hmm. So Swami used to tell that. So right from the beginning, the mobile hospital has been taking this as a very important component of framing its activity. On the physical side, to tell you the truth, the whole sort of a miracle was wrought by Bhagwan himself. Because way back in 2006, when Swami started the mobile hospital, the rural healthcare delivery system in India was really in a shamble. It was a tricky triangle, so to say. On the one hand, government was always pleading that it is not possible to take technology in the form of these, you know, equipments like CT scan, MRI to villages, install them, run them, maintain them, service them. They said, we don't have that machinery at all. The second side of this tricky triangle was the reluctance of doctors to go to rural areas. The doctors had their own justification. They said, there is no infrastructure worth its name for us to enlighten or enrich our qualities, our talents. And they also said that it is not possible to educate our children in those places, Mandal headquarters, where there is only a government school. It looked quite justified. And the base of the triangle was the villagers not being able to gain access even to these small facilities in the towns. Because of various reasons. They live on daily wages, they can't sacrifice, old people, there's nobody to take them, ignorance about health and disease. So in this tricky situation, the master stroke, I would say. Swami made a very simple point. He said, no need to install all this technology in villages. Mm-hmm. Carry them in mobile vehicles. Mm. At the same time, take these doctors in mobile vehicles. You have a village school. Use the village school. Make a makeshift situation. Create a mini hospital. Run the show from morning to evening. And by evening, the doctors can come back. The machinery can be brought back. Any servicing maintenance can be done. The doctors would feel as if they are attending a software job. This apparently simple but highly innovative solution has really revolutionized the concept of rural healthcare delivery, which I'm able to see, and to the extent that our country's principal scientific advisor, Dr. Chidambaram, who came, he was in the mobile hospital for 2 hours, and his security men were saying he enjoys deadline security. Our sir, nobody was in the outfield for more than 15 minutes. And the next day when he was asked to speak in our university on the subject innovation, he said, what more can I talk? Yesterday I saw the best innovation being made by Baba, where a school is converted to a hospital, the most intricate services are being rendered there, and at the end of the day the hospital becomes a mini a school. What more innovation can I talk of? That's
and this is coming from Dr. Chidambaram, the principal scientific advisor to the
government of India and to the Prime Minister.
I see. I'm just curious to know, when you were at this function, I saw the pictures, the Deputy Chairman of the Planning Commission, Mr. Montek Singh Ahluwalia, was also present.
Yeah.
Did you get an opportunity to interact with him?
I didn't get a real opportunity to have a talk for quite some time. It was only on the stage itself. When he asked me, do we have similar institutions, not only Puttaparthi in Bangalore, all over the country, I told him, under the Satya Sai Central Trust, we don't have, sir, but we have an organization called Satya Sai Seva Organization, which also was started and blessed by Bhagwan himself. They may not be doing services of this, you know, quantum or caliber, but definitely the spirit of the whole exercise is also imbibed by them. Mm-hmm. And we have quite a good number of activities, but not to the quantum which is done in the super specialty or the mobile hospital.
And did you impress upon him that these were prototypes, these were case studies Bhagwan had set up?
Yes. Not only to him, but also to other eminent doctors like Dr. Trehan and Dr. Ajit Panda, I think, eminent people there in cardiology. Mm-hmm. I told them, Baba had clearly told umpteen number of times that he has not come to really solve the medical problems or the other social problems. He believes in setting up models. And these models can be replicated, can be done by any other non-governmental or governmental organizations. But, you know, in terms of quantum, Swami never wanted a super specialty hospital in every city or town. He believed that even for the individual, these institutions would act as, you know, an outlet for them to do their daily sadhana, their daily seva for their own evolution. But for the government and the other non-governmental organizations, this serves as a model.
A beautiful one, a flawless one. Now, this is such buoyant, happy news. What is the morale of the team of the mobile hospital here when you came back? How did everyone receive it?
Yes, it has been excellent, madam. Especially, I received umpteen number of phone calls from our doctors. And they are so thrilled of it, they said...
And so are we, just hearing the news. Everybody is happy.
What makes the award special is... Like, this is one award which I can say with all confidence, no lobbying can be done, no pressure can be exerted. Nobody knows that they are in the list of people who are being surveyed. As you can see in that letter, 3,000 more hospitals were screened and surveyed.
So you have no recall of these invisible, quiet people coming to check you out?
Not at all. And there's no pattern of, like, giving an application or a brochure about our hospital. So that really impressed
Very unbiased, very unprejudiced.
All our doctors, very much.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now, for the sake of our listeners, Dr. Narasimhan, this is such great education to hear from you. Can you please just go down memory lane and tell us a little bit about the start of this wonderful project, the Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital, how it began and what it involves? Because the facts and figures are really mind-boggling. And I think if I said them, people would not even believe. But coming from you is what is very important.
Yeah, that means, you know, taking the genesis of this project.
Right.
Way back in 2005, I think in the month of March, our Bhagwan suddenly called Mr. Chakravarti and asked him whether we can have a bus in which there can be a scanning machine, a lab, ECG, all these equipment.
Out of the blue.
Yes, out of the blue. And Mr. Chakravarti said, perhaps, Swami, it may not be readily available, but we can always sort of fabricate it, build to order, you know, basis. But still, because Swami had told him to check on the net, when he checked on the internet, to his great surprise, he found that Siemens India was already in the job and they had delivered two such buses, you know, to the state of Uttaranchal to a non-governmental organization.
I see.
So when he reported this back to Swami, you know, things started, and with Bhagwan, you know, they go at a very rapid pace. But one interesting thing which I would say is, normally when Swami executes a project, you know, he assembles all the three M's, the manpower, material, money or resources together. So that the work just starts on the day it is thought of. But in this project, Swami was not talking at all of the manpower part. And Mr. Chakravarti and the other administrators, Mr. Rajiv Mahajan, incidentally, he is more than a brother to me. He has played a pioneering role in not only getting the bus, but its subsequent maintenance and other aspects of the activity. When they asked Swami two or three times, Swami, how are we going to run this? No recruitments have been made. Then Swami said, I will give you a good doctor.
Uh-huh.
Then they were emboldened to ask Swami, Swami, what will one doctor do? Then Swami said, I will give good doctors two.
Okay.
So Swami was so confident. And on the day when Bhagwan called me and said, can you take over the mobile hospital? I said, yes.
What were you doing at that time, sir?
Yes, I was coordinating the mother and child program of Ishwaram Women's Welfare Trust.
I see.
Then Mr. Chakravarti told me, what emboldened you to say yes? What is it that makes you so confident to say yes? I said, sir, primarily for all Sai devotees, if Swami makes a sankalpa, it has to take place. The second thing is, during my 8-year stint in Hyderabad, where I was doing extensive gram seva, village service, not only medical, but all aspects, I had built up a good team of 150 doctors.
Wow.
Because I realized, it is service which you generate, which attracts people to come.
Hmm.
It is not like business. You cannot search for 20, 30 doctors and then start off. You need to start off with at least two or three doctors, and then people rally around you when once they realize the service is transparent and pure in its motive.
Mm.
And, you know, once the project was started, then, you know, taking Bhagavan's name, you know, I thought deeply over how this is this going to be effective. Because for me, always the benchmark is our rural medical programs, which normally I see are weekend excursions or picnics, you know, going just one day, giving some prosin or coming back. This project should multiply that. And Swami had told clearly, I am naming this deliberately as Sri Satya Sai Mobile Hospital, not a clinic or a camp.
A dispensary, an OPD.
No. He said, except surgeries which require general anesthesia, everything else you should do. If you are not able to do, get them done. This was the message which Bhagavan gave us. So then I thought over it deeply, and always I take 5 as my lucky number because it represents Bhagavan's Abhayasta.
Uh-huh.
5 points came to my mind. First thing is the regularity and fixity, what I would say, that we use the word fixity in approach. It means you should have a regular schedule. So we started drawing up a schedule of 2 weeks. Beyond 2 weeks, it is not possible because mobile hospital activity is very difficult. And beyond 2 weeks, you know, the radius of operation becomes very much.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of time is lost in transportation. That being the first point, the second point I felt we need to have skilled manpower. Because the credibility of this project or the service comes only when eminent people are there in the team. Swami also said, Vaidya Nipunulanti Skeldali, medical experts, not just general physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Thirdly, we should have sound on-site diagnostic support, which Bhagavan had already given, that bus costing ₹1 crore with ultrasound, x-ray and lab. Fourth, I thought we should have a strong pharmacy. You know, you may do the best diagnosis, you may have the best experts, the best tests can be done, but at the end, if you give the villager a prescription...
What is he going to do with
he's
it?
He's not going to do. So we innovated a method where we started giving medicines for 1 month for patients with diabetes, hypertension, epilepsy, thyroid, all chronic ailments. This is one subset of the ill population, structural illness in population who require a constant, a continuous help. And Swami, when he does a help, it is always continuous, a motherly help. So for these patients, we started giving them 1 month. Many eyebrows were raised. The administrators initially were also a little worried, but then it has stood the test of time. We continued to do that. And finally, the fifth requirement I felt is the service should be holistic. The most important thing, because Swami had mentioned the 5 points, it is not enough only if you do a good curative service.
Mm.
So we thought we'll have a triangular approach to tackle this tricky triangle. We'll bring a divine triangle. So the one limb of the triangle represents a curative service, which has to be very strong. Because unless you cure people, you help them in their proximate illness, they are not believed to listen to you if you talk something else.
I know.
So the other limb of this triangle became the preventive service. Each supplementing the other.
So you're educating?
Yes, yes. So this sort of, we realize that we are entering into the community, not like a static hospital.
Yeah.
It is not enough if you mechanically enter, you need to penetrate into the community.
Well said.
I thought over and being studied in a convent school, I know the difference between some of these words. Entering is something mechanical, penetrating is getting inside.
Uh-huh.
So health education became an absolute component of the mobile hospital, and we started doing very extensively and intensively. To this day also, morning I go at 7 o'clock for the simple reason that there are at least 300 patients waiting.
Wow.
So I complete the exercise of health education before the other doctors come.
Oh.
So that being the second, you know, then the persons were raised, you know, whether this is having any effect at all. And in one interview when I told Swami, health education baga chestunamu, kani means but.
Huh.
Swami said, no but, no kani. You have to do.
Health education, continue.
It is your sadhana. Mm. It takes time for people to change their habits.
So basically you teach them about diabetes control and managing.
It is done at different times, different levels, different tools, a lot of innovation.
Fantastic.
The morning speech is very, you know, formal. You know, they have come as patients, you as doctors. But evening when we enter into their community, it is their fort. At that time, the talk is very humorous, you know, very interactive. You know, it's something which people should come and really see and appreciate.
Mm.
And finally, the third limb of this divine triangle,
yes,
is the spiritual base which Swami has always been insisting. Mm. And when it comes to spirituality, it doesn't pertain to any religiosity, orthodoxy or any sect head, nothing like that. We tell the villagers, we tell the patients there, it only pertains to your positive thoughts, the human values about which Swami speaks, and the prayer and meditation which you do. It is not to appease God, but for your own health we do. And again, in that we did a number of innovations, showing them a devotional film of Bhakta Prahlad, Bhakta Tukaram,
Swami. Something they can relate,
yes,
to.
15 to 20 minutes,
yeah,
only, edited versions. And then trying to increase the habit of Namasmarana writing. You'll be surprised to know that we have about 10,000 books.
People
by patients,
wow,
which we have kept in the store. And once when I told Swami, we should build a Likhita Japa Mandir, he was immensely pleased and he patted me. Because in Rishikesh and Sivananda Ashram, I have seen a Mandir which is only the Likhita Japa written by devotees.
Mm.
So this sort of a triangular ideology, you know, definitely the words which they have used, innovation, transformation,
both
really beautifully applied.
Ring out true.
So in that way, we became really thrilled. Though, as I told you, as sadhaks who take seva as a sadhana, we are not very much concerned about the awards and rewards. But as I told, the recognition which it has brought to the Satya Sai institutions, which are playing such a stellar role, and also to the beautiful ideology of the mobile hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, perhaps I'm taking much time, but
no.
I would conclude this only with this, what Swami told me when I showed him, you know, an album with a triangle, you know, curative, we call it curative drive, preventive focus, spiritual base.
Mm-hmm.
Swami saw that and, you know, initially he went on patting me. So at that second, you know, I was so thrilled, I was enthralled then, but Swami, you know, came near my ears and said, Prati kshanamu ide bhavam to panichayali.
Mm-hmm.
Every second you have to work with this.
Oh,
normally
wow,
we think that is the ideology, you know, some of these NGOs, they have some vision statement.
Mission statement, yes.
No, but Swami said it is not vision statement or any background ideology. Prati kshanam, every second you have to work with this ideology.
Wow.
That is something which really shook me. And it made me realize that we have to be in the thought frame, at least in the morning you start off your work with the prayer that Swami should remind you again and again of these three aspects of healthcare delivery.
What a master, huh, Bhagwan?
Yeah, there's no doubt about
My
that.
My God. You talked about having a fixed schedule, so have a certain certainty. What are the days that the mobile hospital operates?
Yeah. Basically, the day for the curative service is 1st to 12th of every month. And for the preventive service, the last day of, like say this month and the 12 days of next month, it operates. And the mobile hospital also, you know, it is not just randomly it goes. You know, what we did is we did a good planning of the mandals around Puttaparthi.
Right.
We thought we'll take a radius of 50 kilometers because for the diagnostic bus to move about, it travels very slowly. So 50 kilometers is the upper limit. And we took these six mandals and brought out what we call nodal points, the base villages,
mm-hmm,
which are a center point for about 40 to 50 villages surrounding. So, you know, on every month, on a particular day, like today being second, we are at a nodal point called Bhairapuram. And to that nodal point, patients come about 600 to 700 every day. And especially devotees who come from overseas, they say this is mind-boggling how you are able to take care. But we have 15 doctors belonging to 9 specialties on any particular day who can take care of these. And these nodal points have been, you know, fashioned in a circular fashion. We thought it as a garland to the master. But in a way it helps us, because if you put 10 points in a circle,
right,
for every point there are 2 points which are quite close by where they can be called for a review. Like you start a medicine for hypertension of diabetes, then we need to review them after a week whether the dose is okay, whether it is enough or more. So even the, you know, charting of the nodal points and the other aspects, you know, pertaining to the logistics was done with a lot of thinking, yes. And Swami, as you know, he gives us broad guidelines and we have to follow this. And, you know, once he told me, mm-hmm, you know, in an interview I was alone and Swami was putting a chain. Then at that time Swami said, I told Swami, sraddhato, bhaktito, panichayali. I was about to tell Swami, said, premato. with
Can
love.
Can you translate, please?
Yes. No, I told Swami, Swami, please bless me that I should do this with devotion, dedication, humility, I said.
I see.
And perhaps I would have brought the word love. But Swami, you know, at that time Swami was such a physical situation, certain words were coming out, certain words were just exploding and coming out.
Yeah.
So Swami said, premato, that is with love.
Oh.
And then he said, 60% of the treatment, you know, the cure is rendered by the love which you, not only doctors, but the paramedics give.
Oh my God.
It is only the balance 40% where if you do a good work, again my grace flows.
Oh.
So I really, with all sincerity, tell you that every month when we have a small informal meeting of our staff,
mm-hmm.
I tell them, even if you don't do anything, do your duty. At least look at the patients, talk to the patients with love, and at no point we have any business to be harsh with them.
Mm-hmm.
And just because they have not brought their books or this or that, you know, in some hospitals we find that they penalize the patient. They say, no, we can't look at you. Come the next day. Then we dig and gather his old record, mm-hmm. and then, you know, we treat accordingly.
Wow, this is like totally redefining the very concept of looking after patient care, as though the patient is God himself, to be so thoughtful and caring and loving. Now, a little mundane question that I have is, where do you get these doctors from? Who are they and what are the specialties they represent?
Yes, that's a good question actually. You know, as I told you, to start with, I had a good team of 150 doctors,
yeah.
most of whom had never seen Bhagwan. They were not devotees in the normally thought of term. But they were people who were attracted by service. And again, I can tell you, madam, with all sincerity, not because I'm a doctor, that every doctor has an inbuilt urge or instinct in him.
I think every human being has.
Yes.
And a doctor
has a special skill.
They have skills.
To give back something to the society which has nourished him, nurtured him.
Yeah.
If only we can bring out that, you know, hidden urge in him, create a mechanism, definitely they will come. And this is how about 150 doctors
are there. That's the key, to create a mechanism.
Yeah. And then subsequently when they started coming, certain, a few more tricks, I would say, use the word, we started doing. I used to tell the doctors, when you come, normally we go to some, you know, recreational place or, you know, some of these places with our friends. Why don't you bring a few friends, especially doctor friends, let them bring their families, they'll enjoy the ashram environment. That's how then I wrote a letter to all the district presidents of the Satya Sai Seva organization, and they sent a list of few more doctors. So ultimately the strength got bolstered, and really I tell you, if I look at the way the Satya Sai Mobile Hospital has progressed, I see three distinct phases. The first phase was of setting up the whole thing, the framework which you built. The second step was in streamlining the works, you know. Like I say, you will do this, you will do that. That I did not enforce on them. I saw them, what were their traits, what is it in which they are good, which they like. And after the streamlining procedure, third stage was of stabilizing it. Everything got stabilized. And in the
so you have very good systems in place.
Yes, obviously, madam. Unless you put systems in place,
you can't
if you are
that
not there, yes. Like I was absent because of my mother's death, but still it went on in the same way. Maybe a special effect comes if you are there, I am there. That was like, but still, the whole thing, you know. And the fourth thing now we are in is we are in the stage of diversification, you know, wherein you try to improve the depth of the service. We don't want to improve the width of the service because, as I told you, it is not possible for us to go beyond 50 kilometers for logistics days. So when I say you are trying to improve the quality, like certain new gadgets like EEG, color Doppler machine, you know, for the audiometry which we do, hearing test, a new machine, all these things we have been bringing.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you have patients who you see who require further specialized care, what do you do for referrals?
Yeah, really, this is a very wonderful question you have asked. In fact, I think the benchmark with which an outreach service can be really judged is this main point. Because as you know, when you enter the community, ailments are of six types. One is common ailment, chronic ailment, asymptomatic ailment, preventable ailment, ailments which are intractable, require higher care, like in a hospital you need to do a surgery. And sixth are emergency problems. Emergency we can never handle. But certain emergency is like a scorpion sting, a snake bite, all. But unless an outreach service is able to take care of these other four or five, it's not worth its name. That is why, to tell you frankly, I tell our friends, you know, either in Bombay or any other city, having this ambulance type is not going, it will solve only the common ailments. You don't touch even the tip of the iceberg of the other ailments.
Mm.
So these six type of ailments you need to handle, and as you asked about the ailments which require further care, what we do is we identify the patient, we do all the tests connected to him. Especially if it's a surgical case,
right.
We do what's called a surgical profile. That is, how is his heart, how are the lungs, how is the BP, is he physically fit
to undergo
the surgery, and is he going to improve after this?
Right.
All that we do on the field, and from the 1st to 5th of every month, the general hospital gives its theater and the nursing staff to us. And today I'm so happy to tell you, we have started laparoscopic surgery for the first time in the mobile hospital.
Oh, yeah, congratulations.
Yes, madam. It's a pleasant coincidence. And being Thursday also, it's very holy for us. So.
And it came right after the award.
Yes.
Such a reinforcement from Swami, like a pat on your back.
Yes, madam. So, you know, we have the hospital, it's a general hospital.
Yes, in Prashanthi.
5 days, yes. We do general surgeries, ENT surgeries, gynec surgeries. What I looked at from the angle was not that we want to show we'll do this, we'll do that. No. I want to show that an outreach service, even though it is going out, it should be able to handle things which can be done back home. It need not be quantitatively present because the volume of cases which have are 3 or 4 times more than what we do. But definitely we need to create a mechanism. And finally, I would tell you, for surgeries which cannot be done here, like for example, you know, cancer surgeries or more, you know, difficult cases. Cancer surgeries, in fact, we have been doing. One beneficiary of this cancer surgery is a staff of our own Anantapur Hospital, Anantapur College.
Right.
She had a cancer breast. We operated on it. So, you know, such certain surgeries which we cannot do, we do what is called a facilitatory service.
I see.
That is, you identify, you do the diagnosis, you do the test, you give the slide, the block, if it is a cancer case or tuberculosis, and then you refer them to the referral hospitals. For cancer, especially at Hyderabad, we have the Indo-American Cancer Center, in which there is one doctor, oncosurgeon, Dr. Raj Gopal, who comes to our mobile hospital service very frequently, and he takes care of those patients whom we have sent. But again, after that surgery is over, the treatment, they come back to us.
I see.
So that the loop is always bent. We want to be part of the seva. Not to wash off our hands saying
no,
we don't
just hand them over. And
I'm so sincere in what I'm saying, madam.
And it comes through, Dr. Narasimhan,
yes,
loud
yes,
and clear.
Yes.
Actually, I just want to deviate from my questions, and I want to ask you, you know, your motivation is so high, your vision is huge, your leadership qualities are obviously very unparalleled, and you're unbelievably dedicated to what you do. What did you grow up on? I know that I really want to save that question for my colleague, Bishu Prushti, who is going to have a longer conversation with you next week. But then, you must have tremendous inspiration and motivation to be doing what you do every single day. Repeat, there's no repeat action injury, there's repeat action inspiration here. Who is the power behind all this? I know you have a very supportive wife, I understand.
Yes, madam, yes. So, in the family, I have not been having any resistance or opposition.
Lucky man.
Yes. Even my father, when I had left the job, which brings a salary of more than 1 lakh rupees, to start with, he was a little unhappy because he came up from a very humble beginning. But incidentally, I don't know, you know, people get attracted with different things. On one Shivaratri day, Swami had called me and given me a Ganesha Vigraha. And Swami said, everything will be taken care of now. And when I met, I went back home. When my father saw this, you know, he got convinced. And from that day, he was never bothered about me. And so is my wife, because I made a simple point that India's culture is the wife should follow as a dharma patni the husband wherever he goes.
Preferably if he's walking on the path of dharma.
Yeah, that's correct. That's the basic thing. Yes, that was. Then secondly, I told her, if we don't listen to Swami's advice, perhaps really speaking, you know, our lives or our children's life may not go in the real path. So that was the support which I had at home. But believe me, none of my family members were to start with what we normally call devotees of Baba. We never knew Baba. I was more attracted by service itself as a doctor, young doctor. And I would like to put on record with all humility and with all my gratitude to one Mr. Rommel, who has been more than my I can't really bring the correct word for him, on the physical plane, and while on the divine plane it has been Bhagwan. This Mr. Rommel showed me that it is not just words or lines written in books that represent, you know, individuals who are towering in their character, in their ideology, but it is possible to be in the midst of the world, your head in the forest and hearts in the hand. And I saw him working in the Hyderabad passport office, and literally I was carried away by his example. I think that is why Bhagwan says, now it is your lives which has to the message. And even now when I have, not only for tricky situations, for even the routine, I always go back to him. And of course now he has stopped giving much overt advice. Because one Swami told me, Manasuki edi tochindo adi chei. Whatever you feel like you do. He said, Swami has given you a blanket check. You can do anything.
Follow your heart. Yes.
But still my gratitude is so much to this gentleman, Mr. Rommel. I have no words to really express it properly. Mm-hmm.
I know him very well, and I respect him deeply as well.
Yes.
He's a wonderful...
Because I had observed him in the minutest aspects of life. As Mahatma Gandhi used to say, in bigger aspects of life, everybody is magnanimous. Somebody has fallen down in a road. You go and pick him up. Everybody will do that. But in the smaller things of life...
Detail. And he's a very humble man too, if I may add, for his accomplishment. Now, going back to the mobile hospital, we noticed that whenever the big mobile hospital goes out of the Gopuram gate, it's followed by a whole lot of trucks carrying food. Yes. Would you like to tell us about that?
See, basically the bus, as you people see... I won't use the word unfortunately, but surprisingly, you know, most of the, even the inmates in the ashram are not aware of what is all this about.
Yes.
Because they think the bus is the mobile hospital. The bus represents the diagnostic limb of the mobile hospital.
I see.
Just as a warrior has his, you know, different shields and so many equipments. The bus is not the mobile hospital.
What is the mobile hospital then?
The mobile hospital is also the bus, but at the same time we have a transport vehicle in which diagnostics pertaining to each department have to be carried.
Okay.
Like if it is the ophthalmology department, you need to have a slit lamp, an autorefractometer, tonometer, so many things. So the mobile hospital has diagnostics pertaining to what we call imageology, that is X-ray and ultrasound.
I understand.
And pathology or hematology. The blood test which can be done.
So you can do testing there, you can do imaging there.
Yeah. So the bus is stopped a little away from the main mobile hospital, which is lodged in the village school. There are five divisions, division of medicine, surgery, obstetrics, gynecology, pediatrics, dentistry, ophthalmology. The bus is the diagnostic section. We have five sections. The reception section where people come, there's the waiting section from where about 15 or 20 are brought. Then the doctor section, the diagnostic section, and fifth is the pharmacy.
Sounds so well thought out.
Well thought. Really?
So what are the total number of disciplines, the specialties, medical specialties?
We have nine specialties on any particular day. And as a doctor with, you know, experience in public health also, you know, I felt that these nine specialties are enough to cover most of the ailments prevalent in society. But there are two more specialties which are lacking. One is psychiatry and one is dermatology. Okay. Again, we made a small innovation in this. The whole of Anantapur district has got only two or three qualified psychiatrists. And fortunately, one of them, who is the head of the department in Government Anantapur Hospital, he comes on the first Sunday. Mm-hmm. He drives down all the way from Anantapur. And to that nodal point, we pool all the psychiatric patients.
I see.
And then he sees about 100 to 120 patients. Again, dermatology, we have the same issue. But here, every month, for 4 days, the dermatologist comes. And we tell the patients to go to the nearest, you know. But dermatology, to a great extent, like physicians like me, also can take care.
Mm.
But, you know, this is the way we have been trying to obviate the problem.
Very innovative.
Yes, ma'am.
And what were the other nine specialties?
Radiology is the first, most important.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the bus, there is an ultrasound, 2D echo, and an X-ray machine. That has to be taken care. Second is medicine. When I say medicine, it is not MBBS doctors, but doctors who have done MD general medicine. They constitute the most important part again. The third is surgery, general surgery. Fourth is orthopedics. Fifth is ENT.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth is obstetrics and gynecology. Seventh is pediatrics, and eighth, dentistry, ninth, ophthalmology.
Sounds like a dream team
you have
over there.
Yes, ma'am. In fact, in our the annual book which the trust brings out, which was released on that, you know, they had included in a mobile hospital a comment made by one doctor, M.B.R. Sharma. Incidentally, sir is in Seva now today also. He was the director of medical education, as you know, the highest post for a doctor in the government ministry. Not only that, a very eminent professor of medicine. He is called Ajatashatru, unparalleled in the whole of coastal Andhra area.
Dr. Sharma.
Dr. M.B.R. Sharma. And he comes once in 3-4 months. He said, I have been in government so many years. It is inconceivable, he said, to think of an outreach service with so many facilities. We have EEG also.
Wow.
EEG is used, as you know, to measure the electrical currents that are present in the brain, because we thought, why all patients with epilepsy or neuro problems should go to Bangalore all the way? It is also increasing their workload and so difficult for these patients.
Cost and inconvenience.
Yes. Really, you should put yourself in these patients' problems.
So much empathy has been
put. We have so much facility, money, everything, known people. And for them, when they go to a new city, it's all like being in an eerie town. And really, they
never mind for villagers, if educated people go to a new city looking for a hospital, you'll be so lost. Like, never mind if your pocket is empty and you don't read or write.
Like I myself in a corporate hospital in Hyderabad, I've seen it is not possible to meet so many specialists in one day. But here it is just across the room. If a physician feels an abdominal pain, needs a surgical consultation, he goes himself to the surgeon. Then if it is a lady patient, a gynecologist enters the discussion. And then if they feel, let us take a scan, a radiologist enters. So many specialists working under one roof, though it is multi-speciality, it is integrated. The efforts are coordinated, there's so much of cooperation, so that at the end of the day, you try to come to a reasonable solution and not make the patient run. Because Swami was very particular. Meer patient lan tippavaddu. Don't make them run here and there.
So considerate.
So we when Swami gives such broad guidelines, we need to bring it to practical point.
Yes.
So what we did is, patients who require blood tests, which cannot be done in our bus, obviously, beyond a certain age, we may not be able to. We will not ask them to go to the super specialty. Though the super specialty insisted the patient should come. I spoke to them with great vehemence, with, quotes from my own pathology friend, that we will centrifuge the blood, take the serum in ice cold packs. About 30 of them, why should 30 people go? One of our volunteers will go and he'll bring the report.
Oh.
Like such small innovations we have made at every front. And I tell
keeping
you, keeping
patient's comfort in mind.
Yeah. And in front of Swami, I would say with all sincerity, every single thing which is in the mobile hospital has come about after deliberate planning, keeping the patient in mind as though he is our father or mother. Sometimes it may not be possible. These are ideological things, I know, but the theme is there. That is the guiding spirit. You may not be successful all the time in this, but still, when you harbor the thought inside, one day or the other, I think that will become the order of the working of all our institutions.
And I hope that day comes soon. The whole team sounds like a team of angel doctors. I wish the whole medical profession could learn from you. Now, so much of good is coming out of this experience. Why is it that the government and other NGOs are not biting this bait and following it? It's the most beautiful, well thought out, considerate, loving model, which has the best of professionalism and best of love and spiritual component involved. Is it because it's not going to translate into votes, or what's holding them back?
Yes.
Those are big budgets. Government has big budgets, allocations for primary health and rural development. And NGOs, they keep talking so much and they're only looking for headline news, and we hear of them in news conferences. But Swami never cared for awards, recognition, nothing, but silently the revolution that's happening.
Yes, sir. As I told you, from the government side, we had perhaps the biggest man in the technical field, Dr. Chidambaram, and he wanted a write-up on all of this. Mr. S.V. Giri at that time was taking great interest, and then he sent him notes about this, then a CD of all this. But we quickly realized that it is not the technical men in India who have carried the power. It is the IAS, the bureaucrats, and we as an organization are not too proactive to, tell them more, rather than, they should come and see. Of course, we did give a write-up, but nothing has come out of all this. And secondly, when it comes to other NGOs...
Isn't that so sad, though?
Yes. Other than this, of course, when we speak of NGOs, some of them are good in their motives, but still, as you know, the love which Swami gives us even now... And, you just can't have words when you speak of Swami. Yeah.
And you can't compare apples with oranges. So, where is Swami's motivation and vision and selflessness? And where is an organized little group of men and women who have a small website with their vision, goal and mission? Swami never had a website or vision, mission, goals when he started this amazing revolution.
Yeah. So I think these NGOs lack somebody like Swami, maybe. But again, the service is absolutely tough, madam. Like my schedule is morning 7 to night 8, 9.
How do you keep going, Dr. Narsimha?
Yes, so I feel, you know, when Swami himself, like now the sports meet is coming.
Right, sir.
We used to see, you know, last when Swami was physically there, Swami comes, you know, in darshan, then he goes away to the stadium.
Yeah, to check the children.
Yes, he had the best of architects, the best of engineers, but he used to himself go and see. In the same way, I feel there's nothing like leader or coordinator in this. You know, the sevak who has been given a larger work. So I like to be at the center point of the whole team, even though the work has got stabilized. I take it as my sadhana. And not only that, Swami was very particular. In fact, one, the bookstall center, when he asked one of the workers, how many books are there in this section, he told it, no, Swami, I do accounts work. Uh-huh. And Swami asked, if you do accounts work, does it mean you should not know how many books are there? So that's why as a doctor, as the director or leader, I know literally how many tents we have, how many chairs we have, you know, everything I know. I want to be through and through in the... And that really brings about a lot of respect among your paramedics especially. And it's not to fear the work. They feel that, you know, when he himself is working so hard. In fact, many doctors who came were also, to tell you the truth, with this matter. You know, Narsimhan is sacrificing so much, why not we also add our bit to it? And of course, the director behind all this drama is our Supreme Lord, to whom we can... There no words can be expressed to express our gratitude to him.
You're so dedicated, Dr. Narsimhan. I understand you have personal health issues. You suffer from migraines.
Yes, that has been off late, yeah.
But it doesn't come in the way.
No.
You just take your medication, keep going.
Exactly.
You never feel sorry for yourself, want to take a day off and just sleep in.
No, madam. That becomes, in fact, more sickness for me, you know. I just can't be like that. Right now, after this interview, I'll be going away back to the village. I'll not take a holiday.
That is something so incredible. Now, if Bhagwan were here in person in the body, what would you tell him about this recent development?
I would submit it at the lotus feet and tell Swami, the ideology which you taught us in so many subtle ways, this has been put into action. And the whole award has been for that. It is not the quantum of work which we have done, like the thousands and lakhs of patients we see or the scans we have done, but the basic guiding theme of a curative drive, a preventive focus, and a spiritual base. You know, Swami, like, in fact, once when I showed him five different books, one was written by a man who had paralysis on one side, one was written by a child, one a Muslim who wrote Allah Malik Sairam Kripa, and one was written by a teacher, all that five stuff. Swami was very happy to see that. Because Swami was clear that health is a state which depends on so many other factors. As I told you, the ahara, achara and all these
vichara
things. Yes. And I'm sure Swami would have been really happy to know about this.
By the way, how many patients have we seen since the time it started?
It is about 700 a day. That means it would be about 8,400 a month, must be in about 6-7 lakhs of patients, you see.
700,000 patients.
Yes.
Since the year 2010?
2006. Yes.
Well, that comes to about 1 lakh of patients a year.
Yes, madam.
100,000 patients a year.
Phenomenal. And as I told you, another adjunct service which we have is the Ishwaramma Trust. It sends its patients who require ultrasound scans or some special blood test or consultation with our consultants.
I see.
They also send their patients.
Wonderful. Hmm. What's next for the mobile hospital, the Sri Satyasai Mobile Hospital?
Yes. The next, which I always tell my paramedics, is the one field where perhaps we all really lack in the way Bhagavan wanted to do, is the love which we show to patients. And to tell you the truth, I am not totally satisfied at any point of time on this aspect, madam. Perhaps I think we need to further improve. Of course, on the technical front, we would like to further diversify our activities. As I told you, we started with simple general surgeries. Then we have started doing cancer surgeries. And now we have started laparoscopic surgery. We want to improve the depth of the service, not the width of it. Because Swami himself, you know, when I told him, Swami, we are doing 12 days service, should I further expand it? Of course, Swami had a different reason at that time. He said, Ledu, he said, Pillalu, పెళ్లిలు చదువులు. He told me, you have children, you have marriages to be done, you have, you know, their studies, you should not... When I told him, Swami, I'm sincerely always immersed in this, he said, no, no. I was surprised. Then Swami said again, pillalu, pellilu, chadulu.
You have children to see off through their education.
He is so compassionate. He just doesn't look at his project. For him, everything, you know, should be given its due importance.
My God, it's so wonderful to hear you resonate Swami's divine vision. And articulate it so well, and also translate that vision into real action pieces.
Yes,
ma'am. So, fantastic. Congratulations for your dynamism, Dr. Nashville.
It's totally from the heart, madam. It's nothing, it's totally extemporary from the heart.
But then you also put your head to make sure things function well and they're thought out and well laid out. It's phenomenal, and thank you so much. It's been such learning for me and Ganesh. I can speak for him, who's all teary-eyed just listening to you. Just hearing you, and I'm sure our listeners have benefited tremendously.
Yeah. I would like to really wind off this. You know,
sure.
Swami once said,
please,
your medicine which you are doing should be Medicare, he said. Medicare is when you treat the patients with love. If you don't do that, he said, you are committing a sin. Medicine is sin if not practiced with care. And secondly, he said, all the time don't be behind me and ask me how should be done, this should be done. I would give you broad this. He said, I have given you three senses. Common sense at the mind level,
right.
Intelligence at the intellect level, and conscience at the soul level. Oh. Use these three senses, you will definitely get replies. And you should see the art of healing should be converted into Medicare and not medicine.
That's amazing. And you know, it's so funny. The big cities in India have all these private nursing homes called Medicare nursing homes.
Yes.
If only they knew.
Yes.
Profit and Medicare don't go together.
Yes.
And medicine would be a sin. Wow, that is quite an insight and a perspective. Thank you very much for sparing your time.
Yeah.
I know you're so busy.
No, madam.
And
it's
we have so much more to learn from you, Dr. Narasimhan.
Yes.
And I would urge our listeners to please tune to Radio Sai next week again, because we have to know more about this person who has led Bhagwan's mobile hospital mission. And my colleague, Brother Bishu Prushti, will be talking to him in greater detail about his journey and his commitment and what drives him. Much to learn from Dr. Narasimhan. Your presence here is deeply appreciated,
yes,
sir.
Yes, grateful thanks to you, madam. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. Mm. Now, dear listeners, I want to hear from you. We want to know what you got out of this conversation, and you know how to reach us, and we are looking forward to your emails about the Sri Sathya Sai Mobile Hospital and this conversation with Dr. Narasimhan. And you can reach us as always at listener@radiosai.org. Okay.
Tune to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, India. Dear sisters and brothers, aren't you still on such a high just listening to Dr. Narasimhan talk about the caring medical care that our Bhagwan has put in place in the form of the Sri Sathya Sai Mobile Hospital? I really do hope that you can share this conversation with more people you know and tell them to catch up with the wonderful work that is happening. It was just so inspiring to hear Dr. Narasimhan move, and I do hope you will send us your feedback to this story. In our inbox, we'll be looking for your email at listener@radiosai.org. Now, moving along, it's my pleasure to bring you part two of our Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Brother Ashwin Venkateshwaran. This inspiring young man expresses himself really well, and I know for sure you're going to enjoy his interview with Radio Sai's Mr. Bishu Prushti. Over now to part two of Sai School and Sai University alumnus, Mr. Ashwin Venkateshwaran.
So from the Ooty school, he eventually came to Prashanthi Nilayam, and so many more years now as a school student till you finished the 12th grade. And I think the school ambience in Prashanthi Nilayam is very different from the ambience in the university, in the hostel as you grow older. And the school also gave you a lot of opportunities to get close to Bhagwan, to express your love to Bhagwan. So this process of attaching yourself more and more to Swami, you know, increasing your love, the intensity of your love for Swami, how did it grow more as you joined school?
It's interesting. I think Swami made a quick transition from being my mother to being my father. When I got to the school, and for good reason, you know, you're thinking about a young adolescent boy and you want to sort of shape him into something that's better. So I think my earliest memories of going back to school were when Swami had once called me and I had asked him in no uncertain terms, "Swami, I want to make you happy. And I want to know what I should do to keep you happy." And for some reason at that time, Swami had given two instructions, which I have known him to give a number of his students during various interactions. The first thing he said was, "Less talk."
Yes.
The second thing he said was, "Less contact." I walked out of Swami's room that day with a zipper on my mouth. Because nothing mattered more to me than to make this Herculean effort to keep him happy. And believe me, I mean it sincerely when I say Herculean, because I was always known to be a chatty guy. So I remember coming into school that day and not saying a word to anyone. I remember doing it for a few days. I remember this extending to a few weeks. And believe me, this whole thing that I should not talk unless absolutely necessary and have as little contact, you know, with, I mean, all my energies, all my efforts should just be about how can I make Swami happy? How do I spend my quieter moments chanting his name? How do I spend my quieter moments completely immersed in my studies such that when I get a good grade, I can go to him and say, "Swami, you wanted an O grade, I've got an O grade for you." That was all that mattered. And I remember doing this for a few months. And after 2 months, Swami calls me in. And the first thing he says, and here I am waiting to get my pat on the back. The first thing he says is, "Hey, too much talk."
Oh my God.
How would I feel? For months, I've sat there with a zipper on my mouth. I've hardly spoken to people. I've not said anything to anyone. I've immersed myself completely in what I felt Swami would keep Swami happy. And he calls me after 2 months and says, "Too much talk." And then Swami points to his lips and says, "Not from here." He points instead to the mind and says, "From here."
Oh.
I hold on to that lesson because I've realized that Swami was never Bahya Priya. He wasn't about externals. He wasn't about the activities that you would do in terms of the skeleton of that activity. In, I know, discourses where Swami has said people write Namasmarana thousands and thousands of times, and every now and then as they're writing Om Shri Sairam, Om Shri Sairam, they look around and say, "Oh, has a dhobi come?" Or, you know, "I've got something on the stove." So to him, it was never about the externals or the expression or the form. It was always about the spirit and the substance. And that was when I realized that despite the fact I had been quiet, my mind was the noisiest mind in the universe. And I had to start all over again. But this time focused at how can I quieten the mind.
Which standard were you in?
I was in my ninth at that time.
Ninth.
I know it's young. I've thought a lot about many of these moments. And I know that as you grow, when you reflect on them, they keep throwing up new meaning. And as you evolve as a human, as you grow as a human, it comes back to you with greater and greater meaning and inspiration.
It's really amazing. I mean, when I think about it, only a Sadhguru can do, you know, for someone who is in ninth grade, the kind of lesson that Swami was giving you and, you know, the kind of reflection that it spurred in you, only he can do that. Because, you know, he instills that love for him in us so much that we are ready to do anything for him. And in that enthusiasm, you know, he cashes on that enthusiasm and he just takes us on the spiritual path. Perhaps what would have taken us 100 years or 2-3 janmas, Swami just telescopes it to just a few months.
Absolutely. And he had such a simple way of doing it. I know of times when he has actually got ice cream served out to the boys when we were sitting on Sunday mornings. And this was always from the Joy Ice Cream Factory. And he would always make it a point in those smallest of activities that he would take on, there was always a deeper meaning to drive home. I sometimes wonder if I grew up a little too quickly. Because with Swami, it's always about growing up and it's always about accelerated growth.
Yes.
And even then, imagine ice cream out to little children. We were excited. How often would we get ice cream? But he was quick to say, boys, God is like ice cream. Now, how are you going to equate God with ice cream? But Swami had a beautiful way of doing it. He said, God is soft like ice cream. God is cool like ice cream. God is white and pure like ice cream.
Wow.
And this was from the Joy Factory. So he said, and finally, God is joy like ice cream. And, you know, it's interesting. Looking back, I don't think I remember the biology or physics lessons that I learned as much. But these moments which immediately had you strike a relationship with this person who could speak to you like this and then turn around and call the Prime Minister of the country into his room and give him advice on how to run the country.
Yes.
It was incredible. I mean, that's why he's got to us. Really, you know, his ability to just mean so much. His ability to give so much, his ability to stand for so much was what really made him a God. As I mentioned, I was brought up in a home which was taught to worship him. He was always in a picture on my altar. But when you do that, most often your relationship with him is, if I don't do something, he will not be happy. So if I do not do my prayer on time, or if I don't do, you know, the rituals on time, I will be displeasing him. But from there, I think being a student of Bhagwan has taught me that you must be able to love him.
Yes.
And when you come from that space of just wanting to love him, and you can just love him completely as a person.
You move from being God-fearing to God-loving.
Exactly, exactly. And how best could he do that unless he took on this beautiful human form? And he could convey such profound lessons in such simple ways.
In fact, that really reminds me of one incident which our teacher, Dr. Sailesh Srivastava, used to always narrate. And there was this external examiner who had come for checking during one of the examinations. And he was very surprised to see that everyone is so disciplined and, you know, there is not even a hint of anyone trying to, you know, copy or any malpractice. So he was surprised because it was never like this in any other school. And so he just went and tapped one boy and said, are you all very God-fearing? And this boy instantly had the presence of mind, you know. But I would say it just came spontaneously. He said, not God-fearing, God-loving.
It's true, it's
true. I mean, at that age, it was not just a theory, you know. We are all living that experience. And I think that is what has in some ways remained in each one of the students. And whoever has passed out from the portals of this university or from the school, I think that seed has always remained. And at various times, and it has blossomed and it has sprouted and it has grown into different sizes and shapes. And I think it has always influenced every person's life. So what are these other moments, Ashwin, with Bhagwan during your school days, you know, which today when you reflect, you know, are your moments of inspiration?
So I was lucky to be in school when Swami was actually building some of his bigger projects. The water project happened when I was in school. Swami's first hospital in Puttuparthi, the super speciality hospital, was being built when I was in school. And
91.
In 91. And I think what touched me the most was Swami's willingness to just give himself away to make these projects happen. There was a time when, I remember, it was a very moving, an emotional moment, because Swami was talking about how he wanted there to be this huge hospital to be able to give free care to the poor that came here. And while many of us may have seen the video of Swami declaring during his 65th birthday that this hospital would be up in a year's time, not many of us are aware of how much of micromanagement went into really running this hospital, into getting the hospital up and running. And the only thing that stays with me is a moment where I think it was sometime in the month of September, and the hospital was to open in November, where Swami was talking to us, and one of the senior officials from the hospital came to Swami and said, "Swami, it's such a big project. Where are we going to run this project? Where are we going to generate funds to be able to run this for a lifetime?" You know, if I was in Swami's place, I think it should have been so easy to say something like, "I am God, so it'll happen." But what Swami said touched me very deeply. He said, "I'm willing to do anything to make this happen. I am willing to step onto stage and auction myself."
Oh my God.
"To the highest bidder to make this happen for the poor." The Lord of the universe doesn't have to speak that way. And to me, I think that was the first moment where this little spark was lit in my heart, saying, "Swami, if this is how much you want to make a difference to the poor, how can I call myself your son and sit and do nothing about it? How can I not participate? And we might have the smallest of tasks to do, but this is our Father. Our Father has built an institution, and his whole idea was, let us try and make as much a difference to the poor as possible. If we truly believe that we are his children, we can't sit back. It's all about participation." So, you know, why I share this moment is, I know that at many points in time, Bhagwan, being the avatar, he kept from putting on the cap of the Lord of the universe. Instead, he put on the cap of a person who made extraordinary things happen out of a deep sense of love and compassion for humanity. If I can share a small moment again from one of the trips to Kodaikanal, during the end of his trips, Swami had this, he would generally call in all the people who have served him, be it the security at the gate, the police force who were around him, the dobis who washed the clothes of Swami's entourage, people who had looked over the homes, housekeeping staff, and he would give all of them something to show them that all their effort was appreciated. And this was a habit. This was something that would happen always towards the end of the trip. He would call all the people who made a difference during Swami's visit to Kodai, and he would personally give them gifts, almost to say, "Thank you for your service." I remember this moment very vividly because it sort of brought back to me in a very strong, impressionable way the importance or the power of good intent. Swami had called the police force who were around him and those who had served in the areas around Sai Shruti, and he had decided that morning he would give each one of them some clothes and a little money. And I remember how he walked into that hall that morning expecting to find 20 people, because that is the number that was given to Swami, and found 100 people sitting there. Swami walked back to the hall where we all sat, and he said, "There are 100 people sitting here. Do we have clothes and money for these 100 people?" We did have enough clothes for all the people that had come, but unfortunately we did not have money to be given away to all of them. And Swami was very, very calm. He just asked us to wait and said that he would go out, give darshan to all the devotees that gathered, and when he came back, we could try and make arrangements to felicitate these people who were waiting for him. Swami went out for darshan, and I remember a few elders who were sitting with us were all of a sudden a little concerned that there wasn't enough money to give all of them a little bit of cash. And almost spontaneously, it came to many people to just see if we could pull in that amount from within the small group that was sitting with Swami. Swami went out for darshan, gave darshan to all the devotees that had gathered, and as he walked back into the hall where we were sitting with the stash of letters in his hand, one of these letters fell off onto the floor. And this happened just before the eldest member in our group, who was particularly concerned that we didn't have enough for the police people who were waiting for Swami's gifts. He looked at him in a very meaningful manner and asked him to open the envelope. And when the man did, surprisingly, he found that there was just enough money in that envelope to take care of the needs of the 80 other people who were waiting for Swami. Now, this is not what was special about this moment, because Swami is God, isn't it? He can do anything. And so this is not what is special. What was special was what Swami said after this incident happened. Swami looked this elderly gentleman in the eye and said, "I did not use my power for this money."
Oh.
"I did not use my power for this money." But this happened to teach you all a very important lesson. And these were Swami's words. When you have a deep desire to make a difference to people, when you have a deep, unquenchable thirst to want to give yourself away to people selflessly, the forces of nature will wrap themselves around you and make it possible. And while what Swami had said came across very, very strongly to many of us sitting in the crowd, because to us, you know, it's easy for us to say, right, so Swami was God and so he made a million things happen. But who are we? We are weak humans. But that particular lesson, I think Swami made that happen to show us that it's about the purity of purpose. It's about the purity of an intent. And if you can feel so strongly that you really want to make a difference to someone, nature, God, whoever this force that you call as, you know, something that's larger than you, will wrap itself around you and make it possible.
That is such a profound lesson. In fact, I'm reminded of one quote which Swami Vivekananda used to say. He said that a pure will is omnipotent. And I think that is what we saw in Bhagwan's life. As you were saying, you know, he was God. If Swami wanted, he could have just waved his hand and produced all these beautiful mansions. But he never did it that way. I think it's only for that reason, because his life is his message, he said. And I think that is what he was doing all the time. So that we know the power of pure love. So that we know that if we have a heart like what he has, like what he demonstrated, then we could also make miracles of that nature. And I think we see that happening every day to some extent or the other, isn't it, Ashwin? Because, you know, when you see especially any service project for that matter, you know, many times you have many service initiatives taken up by different Sai devotees or initiatives taken up by Sai centers and Sai organizations, you know. Every time, you know, you just start the work and with that good intention, with that selfless intention, and it's not like a corporate project where, you know, this is the new project we have to take up, so we have got this many resources and this is the manpower available and this is all the other resources available and so we go in a planned manner. It's always more like, okay, you just take Swami's name and we want to do some good, let's get started, and just things start falling in place. And it happens again and again. We see that, and I feel Swami is constantly teaching us through those examples that all you have to do is have that purity and that will take us. In fact, very recently, the service activities that they were doing for the people in Haiti, you know, who really have been going through a lot in the last couple of years, and they had built houses for them. This International Sai organization had built houses for them, and, you know, they were being given free food and medical supplies, which has been going on like for 2 years. And then they were thinking, okay, should we stop now because we've been doing this for so long? But they really wanted to do. And just at that moment, you know, someone from Argentina calls up some unfamiliar devotee and he says, "No, you're doing such wonderful work. I want to contribute this huge amount and please continue the work." I think these examples are numerous and that keeps happening. And perhaps you see that in many ways in Bhagwan's hospital too, Ashwin, in the functioning of the department, in the procuring of the different equipments for the department. Don't you see this happen in Bhagwan's hospital?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, it's a human way to put down a plan and say, this is what we are going to do, and this is how we have budgeted out our resources, this is our blueprint, and so we intend to finish by this time. With Swami, it's always been the other way around. He would always say, right, there's going to be a hospital here next year. And when you actually go to the field, you find nothing there. And you wonder how on earth is a structure going to rise out of nothing in a year's time. But again, what you say is so true. If you really believe in him, if you really have faith that it's his will, and it's an absolutely selfless motive. It's a desire to make a difference to many, many, many people. I think that is what really drives these projects. And if I can add, having his will is not adequate. There is an interesting joke about a priest who walks into his friend's garden and finds a beautiful garden there. And so he looks at his friend and says, oh, you and God have done such a wonderful job at this garden. And to which his friend smiles at him and says, yeah, but you should have seen it when only God was working at it. So it's not adequate. I know that Swami always talked of his grace as being like the rain. It's not enough if there is rain.
Yes.
You have to have an upturned pot that's willing to receive that grace.
You have to do the tilling of the soil, you have to do the gardening, you have to do the weeding.
Exactly.
All that you have to do, then there will be a shower of rain.
Yeah. But if you have him as your inspiration, there will never come a time when you feel either short of energy, short of enthusiasm, short of motivation. Because that keeps driving you. Just the very thought, how many people in this universe would have the opportunity to work in an institution that he had actually built, he had stepped into any number of times. How many people had the opportunity to work in an institution which he held very, very close to him? I remember when he visited us during the 4th anniversary of the hospital, he compared the hospital to a 4-year-old child.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, this is your baby. You know, you have to take care of this child. It's a 4-year-old. It's growing up. Treat it with love. Give it your all and see where it goes. I know for one that Swami has always promoted his work as being more important than even his physical form. During the earlier years, he would often come to visit us in the hospital when it had just begun. And each time he would, I remember, there was a huge rush to come around and be around Swami. And a friend of mine actually shared this episode. I was working with him in the same department at that time. And Swami happened to walk into the hospital at a time where there were patients to be served in our department. And so I asked this boy, shall we go and have darshan? And this boy said, no, let's first take care of these patients. So we ended up working a little longer just to ensure that the patients who were waiting for a service were offered that service in our department. And I remember walking out with this boy to the main hall close to 15 minutes after Swami had arrived, to find that Swami was sitting in the center of the main hall and there were so many staff around him. And as we walked out of our departments, he turned and gave us a sharp look. And I still feel it was a stern, sharp look. And he sort of called us to him. And this boy, I sort of pushed him in the front. Please lead the way. And Swami looked at him and he said, Swami comes all the way to the hospital to come and be with you, to speak to you, to give you ananda, and you take your own time to come to see Swami.
Oh.
And this boy had the courage which few do when they're in front of Swami, to actually say, Swami, there were patients in our department and we had to look over them before we could come. I will never forget what Swami said after that. He patted this boy on his shoulder and said, very good. And then he looked at the staff who had gathered around him and he said, if you continue to serve the patients, if you continue to do Swami's work, this will give you 3 times the punya of actually coming to see Swami and have his darshan.
Wow.
To me, sitting, just being behind this boy, listening to Swami, it was revealing. It was revealing because, you know, a lot is centered around Swami's physical presence in our organization. And for him to step up and say, my work is more important than me.
You want 3 times more punya.
Isn't it? For him to actually say that, to say, continue to serve the patients, continue to do my work, and that will earn you 3 times more punya than actually coming to have my darshan. I've heard him say this a number of times, even in Parthi, I've heard him often bring it up to tell people, when Swami is coming on a ride before the hospital, don't rush from your work, because that work is as important, if not more important to Swami, than the actual act of coming to have darshan. And right now, when I think about it, the only thing that comes again and again to me is, Swami is everywhere. We may not be able to confine him to a form now, because he's all over. He's with us in our homes. We feel him a lot more in our workplaces. We can feel Swami's presence everywhere. But I still think that that statement of Swami holds so true, that we remain committed to his work. And his work need not necessarily be working in the institutions that he has physically built, but his work is about what we can do to selflessly make a difference to humanity.
Yes.
And if we can stay committed to that ideal, if we can do the best that we can to hold true, I'm sure that that would please Swami a great deal.
I think his work, if you look at the declaration that Swami made in 1947 when he wrote that letter to his brother, you know, Swami said, there is only one work that he is attached to. He first says that I have a task, and that task is to confer ananda on all mankind. And then he says, I have a work. And then he says, I have a woe. And then he says, there is one thing that I really delight in. Okay? And Swami says, my woe is to bring all those people who stray away from dharma into the path of dharma, back onto the path of righteousness. And then Swami says, there is one work that I delight in. And what is that work? He says, it is to ameliorate the suffering of the poor. It is to help those who are depressed and distressed. Swami said, this is the work that I love. And, you know, if we have to define what is Swami's work, what is that work where we can participate in, you know, as Swami said, do my work. And I think this is something that we will have to reflect on. Anything that is selfless, anything that can make a difference in another person's life, I think that is what is our work. And in that way, you know, we can lead a life where our lives will become sort of his message. And I think perhaps that would be our tribute to Swami for all that he means to us and for all that he continues to do for us. Thank you so much, Ashwin. And you are in Bangalore. You do come to Prashanti often. Please do drop in again whenever you are here in Prashanti. There is so much more that you can share about the hospital, about the various ways in which the hospital is making a difference in so many people's lives and the message that is giving out to the medical community out there. And of course, your reminiscences with Swami as a student during your days in the school and of course later as you did your post-graduation. So please feel free to drop in and let's continue this satsang in the near future. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Vishu.
Sarah.
Sai Ram, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for staying with us in Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, on the Asia stream of RadioSai.org. You just heard part two of our Fleeting Moments interview with Brother Ashwin Venkateshwaran, Asai University alumnus, and Ashwin was in conversation with Brother Bishu Prushti of Radio Sai. Now, your feedback really does matter, so please write to us at listener@radiosai.org about your thoughts on this interview. Having said that, dear listeners, I have a bit of a score to settle with you. For the past 2 weeks, I played select bhajans from our recent Sai Blossom offerings, Mata Mata by Dana Gillespie and from Nada Brahman 7. And our team was so looking forward to your feedback to these offerings so that we could incorporate your input while planning our next set of releases. But sadly, we haven't heard back from you. So please, may I ask you to not disappoint us with your silence. I don't have time on the show today to play another song for you, but I ask you, based on what you heard over the last 2 weeks, if you have any suggestions, any input, you know where to find us, listener@radiosai.org. It is now time for me to offer the first morning glory of 2014 at Bhagwan's lotus feet. The love of my life and yours, our sweetest and most loving God, also known as Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. To him I place this prayer before I sign off, that Swami, may all be happy, may all be well, may all be healthy, and may all be peaceful. And I also ask him to please erase all our negative tendencies so that we actually become more like him, loving, caring, giving and compassionate. And dear Swami, let a heart-to-heart bond of love with you just blossom with every breath of ours. Dear listeners, as we wish you a fantastic 2014 ahead, filled with Swami's choicest blessings, I leave you to enjoy a melodious extract from last night's presentation in the Sai Kulwant Hall by the Sai University alumni men's section. Here then is a small short poetry in Hindi by Abhimanyu Kaul, followed by a Sufi number, Saya, by Nishad Mishra. Enjoy. Sai Ram, till we meet next week.
मैं तो चाहूं संगम तेरे